You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. This episode is a conversation with my friend Ian Levy. Ian is an incredibly smart gentleman and also the senior NBA editor for FanSided. And so we talk about a lot of different things, his expectations for the year and potential contenders for the Warriors and a lot of other kind of topics, including something I mentioned on Twitter before, but he created this metric, expected points per shot, and he explains it, and we go through it a little bit because it's one lens as a way of thinking about this Golden State offense. We'll see how it turns out. Conversation runs a little bit over half an hour. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
This is a very interesting Warriors team, and one of the kind of parts of this podcast that I'm trying to do is getting smart people to talk about, before the season starts, what they're looking forward to, what they're expecting from the Warriors.
In terms of expectations, I'm expecting they'll be really, really good. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but I think there'll be some places early in the year where they're sort of transparently gear grinding and sort of figuring out how to make it all work and how to put these pieces together. But I think it maybe won't affect them in the win-loss column, that they'll win some games where they are, you know, clearly not playing their best, and they might, you know, have some blowout wins in games where they're still sort of not clearly playing their best. And in terms of what I'm excited to see, I mean, it's something we've never, at least as long as I've been watching the NBA, I can't remember a team like this with this sort of much offensive talent, with this much complementary offensive talent, and not complementary in like a theoretical way. Like, you think about like the Nash, Howard, Kobe, and it's like, well, you know, if Kobe gives up the ball a little bit and is willing to be a spot up shooter, and, you know, if Howard's willing to play a little more in the pick and roll, like, this is, you know, this works on paper without anyone really having to do anything differently. So I guess I'm sort of interested to see what peak Warriors looks like this year. You know, like, how high can they get? How good can this be?
It's a big test of an idea that I've pushed for a long time, which is the idea that offensive talent helps each other in a way that is, it's a greater build than just adding the pieces, you know, the sum of all the parts. I've said before that's kind of exponential. It's probably not that degree, but something between the two. And the reason this is a test is I think this is the most offensive talent we've ever seen on an NBA team. And the fact that, as you just mentioned, that it's so complementary, and that there are guys that, you know, that work better with the ball in their hands and guys that work better without it, to see this will be a test of a lot of those kind of ideas that have been floating around that you just don't get the opportunity because you don't get a team that's mostly all-stars to playing together.
Yeah, I mean, I think shooting is the most obvious example. There's been some research. Justin Willard, who's a great Nylon Calculus writer and a very smart guy, did some stuff for a website called Get Buckets a couple years ago. And he basically showed that the effect of spacing. So if you consider shooters as people who attempt, I think it was like 5 3-point attempts per 100 possessions. That was sort of the threshold where players started to have value as a spacer. And so if you look at lineups that have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 shooters or floor spacers in them, when you get to 4 and 5 floor spacers in a lineup, that those teams outperform their sort of expected offensive value, what you would sort of expect just by combining those five players' offensive skills in a vacuum. And so that sort of shows you the value. And I think that idea, that same sort of idea, probably holds with things like passing and, ability to create a shot off the dribble and things like that. And so the Warriors are sort of this perfect storm where, you know, we're often going to see lineups with 5 shooters, 5, you know, really good passers for their position, 5 guys capable of handling the ball in a pick and roll or creating a shot off the dribble. And so, yeah, I think everybody's talent in theory just sort of feeds into everyone else's.
Yeah, I was thinking yesterday, I talked a little bit about it on the show, about the idea of this team having 5 potential guys at the same time who can grab and go off a defensive rebound, and that's something really unusual. I think there were a couple groupings that Miami had that could do that when they were playing Bosch, though Bosch didn't do that a lot. He could, when he absolutely had to. But when they're playing Draymond and Durant at the four and the five, every single one of those guys can initiate a fast break and do whatever they're going to need to do out of it. And that's another way that this could be really, really crazy.
Yeah, I think their transition game might be there's a lot of ways where this team is going to be on the extreme end of a lot of different metrics. And I think in terms of the speed at which they play, the average length of their possession, the number of transition baskets or early offensive baskets they're getting, that's another area that seems sort of like a really obvious one where they could be sort of, shattering some statistical norms.
What is your read so far on how they're going to be defensively? Because that is a bigger question this year than it has been in the last couple.
I think they're going to be good. The question for me, I suppose, is like how much energy it's going to take out of them and how much wear and tear it's going to take out of them. I was looking at some rim protection numbers from Nylon Calculus yesterday, and it's easy to forget how much they lost with Bogut and Azili. By the rim protection numbers in Nylon Calculus, both of those guys were probably in the 5 or 10 best rim protectors in the league each of the last 2 years. And so the fact that they've lost both of them and, Pachulia, is a sort of a good fit for what they do offensively, and he's good on the defensive glass, but he's definitely not a rim protector in that class of either Bogut or Azili. So I think for their defense to sort of hold together, they're going to maybe need to be a little bit more aggressive, a little more ball pressure, and maybe sort of have to exert a little more energy on the perimeter than they have in years past. And so maybe that adds some wear and tear on the bodies, that, adds to the exhaustion factor. Although all of those things, we're sort of playing with the margins because they have so much depth that it may not matter. And also, their defense has been so good the past couple years that their defense could take a step back. And with how much better their offense is supposed to be, they could still be the best team in the league, even if their defensive efficiency drops by a couple points.
Yeah, that's something that struck me as well when I was looking through the numbers, and this last year's Warriors team was one of the best offensive squads in recent memory, and the expectation, completely justified, is that they will extend beyond that, so maybe they'll have the best offensive season. There are a lot of different ways, but they'll probably have the best offensive season if they stay healthy since the return of the three-point line to its greater depth, but maybe they'll even go beyond that. And that is a challenge with this team, though. But when you get to the idea of the playoffs, of that defense was a big part of why they succeeded. But the other crazy thing with this team, and a part of it is because of Durant choosing to join the Warriors, is that the top of the rest of the league appears like it got weaker. I mean, maybe not a lot weaker in like the case of Cleveland, but weaker than it was last year, especially when you think about the Spurs.
Yeah, I think that idea is kind of interesting, and I think a lot of it has to do with how well the Thunder played the Warriors in the playoffs last year. Because I think during the season last year, I don't think the Thunder were seen as sort of legitimate threats to the Warriors. I think it was sort of assumed that it was going to be San Antonio or Golden State out of the West, and that was it. Yeah, I think San Antonio is going to be worse this year. I think losing Duncan, as crazy as it is to imagine, losing a guy who's been in the league for 2 decades, and that alone could knock you down a tier. But I don't think they'll be quite as good this year. I don't think they're going to be, a 65, 66, 67 win team like they were last year. And I think the Clippers have all the same problems that they have had before. They're not a lot of depth. Their wing rotation is pretty shaky. It's still sort of Paul, Griffin, and Jordan together. And are they good enough to beat the Warriors? Yes, I think it's they're, the league has gotten not quite as good, but I don't know. I think there maybe was more space between the Warriors and the rest of the league during the season last year than we, sort of remember at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's a strange circumstance for a lot of reasons, and it is good to note that the Thunder didn't have that in the regular season. But I think the Spurs, who were their biggest threat in that context, are going to take a step back for a series of different reasons, just because they don't really have that motivation. And something else, it struck me when working on the Over Under podcasts for Real Jam Radio and Dunked On, was when you're really trying to put your money where your mouth is in terms of, you know, thinking of how a team's going to do relative to expectations. While there are some exceptions to it, Portland last year was an obvious one. In some ways, it's easier to make an under bet than an over bet, because there are lots of ways that a team can disappoint, the most obvious being injuries. But there are fewer ways for a team to really outperform, because you need everything to go right. You know, you need your team to be healthy, you need your best players to play, and there are a lot more ways, especially when you consider tanking, for that to happen. And when you think about that in terms of the Warriors, is like, yeah, sure, a team can step up, and we would love to see that just because as fans of competitive basketball. But at a very real point, what we saw in the West last year in particular was that more teams fell than rose. And that happens. There's nothing really wrong or right with that. We wish it happened less. But that is something that is a part of this equation as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of easier to envision the ceiling for, you know, almost every team than it is to see the basement. And part of that, you know, is reckless summer optimism heading into the season, and not just by fans either. You know, I know that's sort of like this popular trope, you know, that the fans of every team are overly optimistic about their team, and they see they see their squad as better than it really is. But I think that's sort of a general pervasive thing. I mean, it's nobody likes watching teams struggle. Nobody likes watching players have down seasons or struggle with injuries. So I think everybody, as you look around the league, you know, you sort of naturally err on the side of rosiness. You know, you sort of want every team to be as good or as interesting as they can be. You know, and I wonder how that comes into play with the Warriors. I mean, we're assuming that they are, going to tear through the Western Conference, and that if they don't, you know, win 73, it will mostly because they're sort of dialing it back and resting players and being willing to sacrifice some games. And, it seems like it's almost a foregone conclusion that they're, you know, going to be playing the Cavaliers again in the finals. But there's, you know, there's still things that can go wrong for Golden State. And, all you have to look at is how dominant they were last year and the fact that it unraveled and they weren't able to win the title. It's something I wrote about earlier this summer, that the idea that anybody is sort of invulnerable or inevitable is always an illusion. Anybody can lose. It doesn't matter how good you are. Something can always sort of pull it apart.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's part of what makes sports so much fun, is the idea that as much as we think we know, and everybody, you know, it seems like everybody thinks they know a lot, things can always surprise you. And if that were not true, this would be a very different exercise. You know, you'd be sitting there and going, oh, well, it's a lock that they're going to win X amount of things and all that. And that is what makes it interesting. But part of this Warriors team that separates them from last year's team or the year before or so many other things is that I can use the example of the media room. Once the Warriors were just demolishing everybody, whether it be the 24-0 start to the season or later on when they pushed for the wins record, when you have a lot of people who follow a team closely and know what they're talking about, you start to get into these like weird, awkward conversations. And one of the ones that was a frequent point of discussion was, what would it take for the Warriors to not be the favorites? And really what everyone said was it was a Stephen Curry injury. And that is what happened. You know, whether it's, I consider it explaining what happened rather than making an excuse, but he was not 100% during the finals, during any point of the playoffs after he sprained his MCL. And so what that did was it kind of illustrated, okay, you know, no team is invulnerable, anything like that. But Durant fundamentally, he doesn't change the fact that they're vulnerable, because every team is. But right now, I'm leaning towards the idea that even without one of their two best players, the Warriors would still be the favorites at least to win the West.
Yeah, I would think so. Or at least compared to everybody's, sort of like on paper preseason expectations. Like if you took Curry or Durant off that team right now, I think they would still be the favorites going into the season. But, you know, that could change, you know, irrespective of how the Warriors play or what happens to them, that could change. If the Spurs go into the season and rip off 24 straight, you know, that could change things. The Clippers go out and sort of everything's clicking and they're really working, or they find some trade and sort of land that small forward that they desperately need. You know, that could change things too. But yeah, I think the Warriors are in that position where they're probably going to be the favorite all season long. They're going to have all this attention. They're going to have all these, you know, these national media people who have relocated to the Bay Area for the season. You know, almost every national story is going to be about them. They're going to be the top of the ESPN NBA page, you know, most days. And so that's something to work through. And it's, you know, it's a lens that sort of warps the narrative about them somewhat. You know, if everybody has to write about the Warriors, they're going to find things to write about, and you know, flaws or things they're struggling with are going to get magnified. And at the same time, you know, things that they do that are going really well are also going to get sort of overblown. You know, the idea of sort of properly rating the Warriors is going to be, maybe impossible this year. Maybe that's too strong a word, but I would imagine that that's going to be a real challenge this year, that they will sort of be overrated and underrated constantly, because they will need to be, by virtue of the media empire, they will need to be rated, you know, on a second-to-second basis.
Yeah, and there will also just be a different kind of attention on this team. Thinking about Miami when LeBron went there, you know, that was a team that I got to cover a couple times mostly at Oracle, and the nature of the attention that they got both home and away was completely different. It was something that was just an experience in and of itself, and especially for the star players, because they're just so many flashbulbs. And as much as, let's say, Durant, because he's the new addition, as much of a spotlight as he had in Oklahoma City, it's a very different thing to not only be in a larger media market, but to be on the team. Like, right now, the Warriors are probably the definitive team in professional sports. They're probably not the most famous because the NFL in the United States is so much bigger, but there isn't that definitive NFL team like there is with the Warriors. So that will be a different experience. But I want to transition into something you and I have talked about before. Would you say you created XPPS? Would that be a fair term to use?
I created the metric that was named XPPS. I think that other people were working on similar things at the same times that have similar or have slightly different acronyms. I know Kurt Goldsberry was doing similar work at the same time. And after I finished it, I was very excited, and I emailed Dean Oliver about what I thought I had figured out was this magic formula. And he was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, we've been doing that for years. It's just not public."
which is another challenge with this business. So expected points per shot. Actually, I was going to try to explain a little bit, but when you have the creator on, you might as well let them take the lead on that.
So it's evolved quite a bit from when I first started, but the original idea came from a series of posts. I can't even remember who did it, but it was about blocked shots, and that you know, not all shots that are blocked are from the same spot. You know, if you block a mid-range jumper, you know, that probably has a less of a chance of going in. So maybe blocking a mid-range jumper is not quite as valuable as blocking a three-pointer or blocking a layup or something like that. And using Hoop Data, which at the time was sort of the first site that had shot locations, you could calculate the average value of shots from different locations. So on average across the league, you know, a mid-range jumper was worth something like 0.78 points per shot on average, and a three-pointer from above the break was like just over 1 point per shot, and a three-pointer from the corner was like, I can't remember, like 1.15 points per shot or something like that. So anyway, what you could do with that was that you could take a player's shot distribution, all of their shots for the season, and you could sort of boil it down to a single number that was, if they were a completely average shooter, how many points per shot would they have averaged with this shot selection. And so that was sort of this somewhat distilled measure of their shot selection. So you could see who was taking a really efficient shot selection, who was taking a less efficient shot selection. So people who had really high numbers in XPPS were centers, people like Tyson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan, who pretty much everything was around the rim, everything was dunks, or, you know, somebody like Stephen Curry, where it was sort of like all layups or three-pointers. They would have a really high XPPS number. Somebody who shot a lot from mid-range, maybe somebody like Dwayne Wade, would have a lower XPPS. And then the interesting thing then was to compare their expected points per shot to their actual points per shot. So, you know, even though sort of objectively Dwayne Wade had a less ideal shot selection because he took a lot of mid-range shots and a lot of shots sort of like just outside the paint, he was very efficient in those areas. And so he sort of compensated for maybe a less efficient shot selection. Then you'd have other guys who had very efficient shot selections, but were not maybe not great shooters. And so it sort of all balances out. And so then that sort of went on. Kurt Goldsberry did a lot of things with that. I think his shot score measure was a similar idea, calculated and sort of structured a slightly different way. And then at Nylon Calculus the past few years, Seth Partnow had expected effective field goal percentage, which was essentially the same concept, but the number was converted to an effective field goal percentage. I always used points per shot attempt because I liked essentially mapped it onto true shooting percentage because I like the idea of incorporating free throws in there because to me it seems like free throw attempts are sort of a part of a player's constellation of shot attempts, even though they're not technically coming from the field, that they're sort of reflective of the player's sort of offensive habits and where they're active.
Yeah, and the lens of XPPS is fascinating for this Warriors team because they have a little bit of both. They have guys like Durant who can outperform, you know, their expectation just because they're really good at doing what they do. But they should also be getting shots in the areas that are most desirable as well. So where that interplay hits at the end of the day will be notable and interesting, while it might not be definitive.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things that I sort of found when I was playing around with XPPS, and I should also note that this was a couple years ago. I am not a trained statistician, so this was my first sort of like dipping my toes in the water, both of like trying to create a basketball metric and sort of learning basic statistical stuff. So I sort of learned a lot by playing with this, both about basketball and stats. But one of the things that showed up was that most of the really good offenses, a common element with the good offenses was not so much shot selection as shot making. So that there were teams that had inefficient shot selections, but they had guys who were really good at making those shots. So the Warriors would be, the Thunder would be an example, and the LeBron James Miami Heat would be an example too. James, Bosch, Wade, Durant at that time, less so now, and Westbrook were all really active mid-range shooters, but they were all good mid-range shooters. Even though they took a high volume of shots there, they still sort of maintained that efficiency. And so the lesson there for me, I extrapolated was, you know, as much as teams would like to only take layups and three-pointers, that's not possible. The defense sort of won't allow that, especially if you're also going to try and take open shots. So there's sort of diminishing returns. There's a limit to how much, you know, how many open and high quality shots you can get. And so the teams that are really exceptional are the teams that, you know, make their open shots, create a lot of high value open shots, but also have a few of those sort of offensive stars who can make the bad shots also. And that's part of the sort of value of somebody like LeBron or Durant or Wade, is that in those situations where their offense is not capable of creating an open three-pointer or creating an open lane to the basket, that they can sort of make something happen from 15 feet and do it relatively efficiently. And so the Warriors are an interesting case because they, at least last year, they sort of seemed to be immune to these diminishing returns. Their shooters were so good that they could take – they could sort of take more contested threes instead of maybe chasing open mid-range jump shots, and it didn't hurt their bottom line, that they were good enough shooters that that trade-off sort of didn't materialize for them. And I would expect this year it to even go potentially to even go further. I know Durant likes some mid-post stuff, and he'll get some touches at the elbow, and you know he was a really good post scorer, so he'll maybe still be more active in mid-range than he had been in the past. But yeah, their offense as a whole, I think, will continue to sort of focus to the extreme on shots at the rim and three pointers. And, you know, if last year's any indication and the sort of the track record of their players, it's not going to cost them. You know, they can take what the defense gives them and still, you know, be incredibly efficient with it.
While this is kind of an aside, when you were giving the explanation just now, I was thinking about the Bulls and how their XPPS might be appalling, just because that's, you know, that's kind of what they're doing and what they've kind of set out with in a way with their offense. And I know that's not what Hoiberg is intending, but with the personnel that they've put together, that might be what happens.
Yeah, they would sort of be the probably the best case or the best example of a team with a poor XPPS, and it's maybe not by design of the offense, but by tendency of the players. Rondo and Wade particularly active in the mid range, Butler a little bit too. Wade is probably not at the place in his career where he's able to sort of make lemonade out of those lemons the same way he used to when he was in Miami. So I would expect that it's going to be a somewhat ugly calculus for them.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. And the last thing that I wanted to discuss, just because I think it's interesting to hear people's answers on it, is you can think about it more in terms of the playoffs and a 7-game series if you want, but who do you think are the biggest threats to this team in, let's say, for this season? But just like, who do you think matches up well? What kind of a thing could it be? It doesn't have to be conference or anything. Whatever teams you think could be a challenge.
I think Cleveland obviously is a challenge. They, they figured out something in the playoffs last year, that worked. It required sort of a superhuman effort from LeBron, they're certainly not going to match the Warriors' win total this year, but in the constrained environment of a 7-game series, maybe LeBron can sort of summon that again, and they're able to replicate some of the formula. Obviously, it's a little bit harder with Durant in there now. But probably the Cavaliers are the closest. I guess, the Clippers are still interesting. They don't look like a team that will sort of they're not going to try and out-Warriors the Warriors. They're going to do their own thing. But I think Griffin was so good in the playoffs 2 years ago, that series against the Spurs and then the second round series that they sort of blew against the Rockets. I felt like that was like peak Griffin. For 2 weeks, we got to see it. And then we never really got to see it last year. If he can get to that level, I think he's someone like LeBron, or I think he could get to a sort of LeBron-esque level against the Warriors, where he could sort of single-handedly be a game changer. And if they can get enough from Paul and Jordan and their bench, that they could make it interesting. The Spurs, I'm not sure. I love Leonard and Aldridge and what they've done, last year and for years. I'm feeling a little nervous about Gasol and Lee and some of the changes they've made this year. It doesn't look as sort of clean on paper as it has other years. I don't know. And then I'm interested to see Boston. I think there's a chance. It wouldn't surprise me to see Boston sort of come in again, right at like 49, 48, 50, 51 wins, something like that. And maybe be better, look better without necessarily winning a whole lot more games. But I also think they're a team that's so, what happens to them this season is so predicated on internal development and like Crowder taking another step forward, Thomas taking another step forward. I got to tell you, what I've seen of Jaylen Brown in preseason, he looks way more ready to contribute than he did at Summer League and that I thought, heading into the draft. If he's a rookie contributor, that means a lot. If Marcus Smart is hitting three pointers, Olynyk's healthy. I think they're a team who if there was a team that I felt like was maybe going to come out of nowhere and really jump a tier, I think it could be the Celtics. And so maybe that's they're a team who sort of puts themselves in that conversation as a team who could give the Warriors a tough time. And part of that probably too is because the Celtics play a similar style, you know, that they play really fast, but it doesn't hurt them on defense, you know, great transition defense, really good in the half court too. A lot of good wing defenders to chase Curry and Durant around, you know, they can do some switching and stuff too. I don't think Toronto's quite there. I think maybe they'll be better. They have a chance to be better than Boston this year and certainly push Cleveland in the East, but in a playoff series against the Warriors, I think they're probably at a bigger disadvantage than either Boston or Cleveland.
Yeah, I like that you got to Boston because that's one that I've been settling on a little bit the last couple of weeks because they have a lot of really good perimeter defenders and their offense can get there. You know, it wasn't strong enough last year to be a real threat, but Horford helps a lot. And they have enough defensive talent on the perimeter, which is something very unusual. I mean, to me, only the Spurs and the Celtics have those multiple really high potential perimeter defenders that you can stick on Curry, Durant, however you really want to do it, and then have enough competence everywhere else. I mean, we'll have to see where they would hide Isaiah, but outside of that, they just have good personnel to take on this Warriors team. And, you know, eventually maybe Minnesota kind of takes that model to another degree, but they're going to need more talent and they're going to need a lot more time. So they have that. And then also we'll have to see what Utah's offense can be, but defensively Utah has some good personnel.
Yeah, I guess I sort of forgot about Utah. I don't know. They've got a lot of pieces too. It's hard. I think it's hard for me to imagine Utah challenging Golden State in a playoff series just because they've been so uneven the past couple of years. You know, they have all of these interesting pieces. They seem like they should be better than they have been the past couple of years. And so I feel like maybe they're one that I sort of have to see it a little bit early this season before I really see them as somebody who could challenge the Warriors. And there's a few other teams down the road, you know, in a couple of years, maybe you look at as a team that's sort of building towards something. I like, you know, Phoenix maybe is more than a couple of years away, but Chris and Dragan Bender and, I think they've got some interesting pieces too. Devin Booker, you know, they could be heading for a place where they're, you know, in a couple of years, maybe they're the ones who are sort of taking over as the Warriors are aging out of their prime.
So the last question it's not really a question. It's just giving you an open floor. You're talking to a listenership that is mostly Warriors fans. Is there anything else that you think is worth considering for them as we move into this season?
I don't know. Don't take it personal. There's going to be a lot of hate thrown at the Warriors this year.
Oh, yeah.
Twitter is going to be ugly at times. And I would say, you know, just appreciate what you've got because it doesn't last forever. It should be a really special season. However it shakes out, it should be incredible to watch. So enjoy every minute of it. And to fans, to the fans of everybody else out there, if any of them happen to be listening, I would say take hope because it's not going to last forever. I remember when LeBron went to the Heat with Dwayne Wade, just feeling like, well, you know, the NBA is not fun anymore for a couple of years. You know, like this is you know, this ruins everything. I'm going to have to wait 5 years before it feels competitive again. And then the Heat went out and lost that first finals and, you know, that feeling evaporated pretty quickly. So to everybody else, whatever hopelessness you're feeling right now, you know, the Warriors still might win the title, but they're not inevitable and they won't last forever. You know, your team will be back there someday. So
one other quick note along those lines is that there is kind of the idea of everything, you know, everything working out, but the process of figuring this out, you know, like piecing together what this offense is going to look like and everything else is going to be really fun. You know, like to see these great players kind of learn how to play together and figure it out for those people who are watching this team every game will be an experience. And once that is done, it won't happen again, because once you build that chemistry, you can improve it over time, but you don't really have that full adjustment process. And so that will be fun to see for, I don't know, maybe a couple months, however long it really takes to figure out how this Warriors team gets to their best level offensively, defensively, and everything in between.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be this monolithic stampede to the to the finals. There's going to be plenty of interesting intricate small details to watch for 82 games. You know, there's going to be ugly gear grinding as they figure out how everything's going to work. You know, there's going to be guys who are sort of out of sorts and have to find their place in the rotation. There's really interesting young guys on this Warriors team, you know, down at the end of the rotation who are going to get minutes in blowouts and, when other guys are resting. So it's not going to be just, boring 30-point wins. There's going to be a lot to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
That was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Ian Levy for taking the time to come on. You can read him at FanSided and many things involving the Hardwood Paroxes and Basketball Network. You can also follow him on Twitter at Hickory High, HickoryHigh. Really did enjoy talking with him. Big fan of his work. And this is a team that one of the fun things about it is lots of people have opinions. So we'll probably have some more of these conversations as well before the season starts, and we can really get into the nitty-gritty, but we'll have some of those as well. And so for those of you who haven't listened to it yet, the first two episodes of this week were less time-sensitive. I talked about the four factors yesterday, and then just Kevin Durant as a scorer the day before, and I have pieces coming out in the near future for The Athletic on both of those topics. I'm just working on taking them from note form to actual piece form, and so that will happen in the next couple days. So if you have any insight or input, you can always reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, or DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. If it is like a question you want answered on the show, that's probably a better way to do it because then it stays in my inbox. If you want to follow Locked On Warriors, you can Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com, whatever works for you. And if you like the show, that's awesome. You can support it by subscribing, downloading every episode, and then rating and reviewing it on whatever podcast player you use, because that can be a really big help just to make sure that other people know about it and spreading the word however you want to do it. And it's been fantastic to see it grow in even the last couple of weeks, and I'm so appreciative of everybody for helping out with that. It means a lot to me, and it has been really fun so far, and it's only going to get a whole lot better once the real games actually start. And one difference for the Warriors that, as I see other people in the excellent Locked On Podcast Network, is that they don't have as much drama in terms of roster spots. So I'll presumably talk about the 15th spot when that comes out, and if the Warriors ever do anything surprising in terms of their roster, can certainly do that. But they don't really have a lot of those urgent topics right now, so that's why I'm kind of getting through some of these other things and setting the groundwork for some of the topics that probably won't be full episodes later on, but will just be points of discussion. So I appreciate you all coming along for the ride. Take care and make it a great day.